Time for Wrigley's Spearmint.
The March of Time.
The makers of Wrigley's Spearmint Gum are the best-known makers of gum in the world. The editors of Time are the best-known historians of the news. So Wrigley's asks the editors of Time, the weekly news magazine, to prepare and present, for your enjoyment, their reenactment of memorable scenes from the news of the world.
From the March of Time.
Wednesday, May 13th, 1936. Today in Brooklyn, New York, suddenly reappears under the legal spotlight an incident which begins when Charles Wiggin, driving home late at night with his wife and sister-in-law from a visit to Long Island, stops his car at the side of the road to wait for a party of friends.
Here comes the car now, Charles. Maybe it's them.
They ought to have caught up with us by now. Oh, no, that's not them.
What's the matter, buddy? You lost?
Why, no, we're waiting here for some friends.
Oh, I see.
Charles, I don't like the looks of those two men. They might be thugs.
Yeah, we better get out of here.
Don't mind if you just take a look in your car, do you? We're police officers.
Yeah, that's what you say.
Hey! Stop! Stop!
They're getting in their car to follow us. Do you think we'll get away?
We'll do the best we can.
They're shooting. Oh, Charles, I'm scared.
Look down below the car, Margaret.
If we can only find a cop, it'll be all right.
Help! Margaret's bleeding. She's been hit.
Charles Wiggin outdistances his pursuers, gets his wife to a hospital where she is found to have a bullet in her brain. Later dies. As it is discovered that the men who killed her were Nassau County plainclothes detectives Joseph Murray and Matthew Simmons on special radio burglar patrol duty, they are taken by District Attorney Martin Littleton before the grand jury, which reports that neither the officers nor Charles Wiggin were at fault, refuses to bring an indictment. To this conclusion, says Brooklyn's Kings County Judge Franklin Taylor,
if an officer shoots illegally, as these officers apparently shot Mrs. Wiggin, and kills, that is murder, no matter what District Attorney Littleton thinks. Little protection for citizens can be expected unless the District Attorney is on the side of the law.
And replies District Attorney Littleton,
the grand jury has made its decision, and the two officers who shot Mrs. Wiggin are back on their regular patrol duty. As far as this office is concerned, the death of Mrs. Wiggin is a closed incident.
As prominent figures in Manhattan political and police circles join the growing controversy, as the New York press takes up the fight with cartoons, editorials, and headlines, one New Yorker steadfastly refuses to express an opinion. A mild-mannered, middle-aged Brooklyn widower, Charles Wiggin. Then, today, to the District Attorney Martin Littleton goes a letter.
Requests have been made of me that I supersede you as district attorney and that a special grand jury be convened to reopen the Wiggin case. Therefore, I must ask you to send me a full report covering all details of the killing of Mrs. Margaret Wiggin. Signed, Herbert L. Lehman, Governor of the State of New York.
Today, as Republicans carefully eye the forthcoming Cleveland National Convention, less than 1 month away, from a Republican Party spokesman is reported a surprise plan.
This June, as the Republican Convention gets underway, the delegates and voters listening into the radio will hear a special 1936 entertainment our committee has prepared. When a delegate rises to speak,
Mr. Chairman, the state of Virginia casts 10 votes for Alfred Landon.
Hallelujah, one more hit to cross. Hallelujah, one more hit to cross.
Negro Jubilee chorus to remind the colored voters that the Republican Party is the party of Abraham Lincoln. When another delegate stands up,
Mr. Chairman, Illinois casts 35 votes for William Franklin Knox.
Latin area to impress the Italians in America of their allegiance to republicanism. And when a Midwest delegate rises,
Mr. Chairman, Wisconsin casts 21 votes for William Edgar Borah.
Mm-hmm. real German band to remind the German Americans that they have always been good Republicans. It's going to be an elaborate, well-staged musical convention.
As the Democratic big guns learn of the Republicans' new musical political convention, they announce,
"If the Republicans think they're going to put one over on us by broadcasting music and entertainment at their convention, they're greatly mistaken. We'll match them chorus for chorus, race for race, and for every brass band they have, we'll have a symphony orchestra with 150 pieces.
...1936... marches on. Today, before the United States House of Representatives,
raise your Lemke Farm Mortgage Refinancing Bill, having been brought from the Rules Committee to the floor by petition of 218 members, having been called up for debate by a roll call vote, is before the House, H.R. 2066.
Thus, the famed Frazier-Lemke bill, bottled up in committee for more than a year, is abruptly summoned to the floor of the House, as dismayed Democratic floor leaders and party whips are dispatched to round up all available voting strength. Leading the heckling of the bill's supporters is North Carolina's Representative Cooley.
Mr. Speaker, as I understand it, the Frazier-Lemke bill is a scheme whereby the government will be enabled to help farmers pay off their mortgages by expanding the currency up to $3 billion. So that's half again as much money as there is in circulation now. It can't be done.
Mr. Speaker.
The gentleman from North Dakota.
Why does the gentleman think it can't be done? It's the same thing the Federal Reserve banks have been doing right along.
I should think the gentleman would be embarrassed that his fantastic scheme of world-controlled inflation has received the stamp of approval from such men as Father Coughlin.
Mr. Speaker. The chair recognizes the Speaker of the House, Mr. Burns.
I have here a letter which I think may interest the gentleman. It is from William Green, President of the American Federation of Labor. It says, quote, "The Executive Council of the American Federation of Labor has studied all the features of the Frazier-Lemke bill and is unconditionally opposed to it. The inflationary feature would raise prices, but wages of labor would stand still. We are relying on the friends of labor in Congress to vote against the Frazier-Lemke bill."
Mr. Speaker, that letter is damnable poison. If it defeats this bill, it will have done more damage to the cause of labor than William Green can ever make up for. He is spreading the poison of the struggle between labor and capital. But I still expect this bill to pass with a 100-vote majority.
But tonight, the tide turned by A.F. of L.'s potent last-minute lobbying, the bill which this morning was thought by administration leaders to stand a good chance of passing, is defeated in a sweeping New Deal victory of 235 to 142, thus downing the most basic single threat to New Deal self-assurance yet considered by Congress. Today in Berlin, Germany, decrees the Minister of Propaganda, Dr. Paul Joseph Goebbels,
"The custom of dramatic critics to attend the opening performance of a new play or motion picture and then work late into the night preparing their reviews is a system introduced by Jewish newspapers under the old regime and is typical of the hasty, slipshod methods of Jewish intellectualism. In order that the impressions of a play may be digested properly, in the old methodical German manner, a dramatic critic is henceforth forbidden to write a review of any play or picture until he has had one good night's sleep."
To Today from Kansas City, where 6,000 physicians and surgeons are attending the 87th annual meeting of the American Medical Association, comes report of a scene yesterday morning in the body's official legislative session. Reporting is Judicial Council Chairman, Dr. G.E. Follansby.
Gentlemen, as you know, our president-elect for the coming year, Dr. James Tate Mason, is in a critical condition in Seattle.
Last June, we elected Dr. Mason to our highest office. I suggest to be inaugurated tonight under any circumstances.
You all know it would be contrary to our Constitution to induct a dying man into the presidency. I suggest that Dr. James S. McLester continue in office for another year. Yes?
Telegram.
Thank you. Gentlemen, this message comes from Virginia Mason Hospital, Seattle. Reads, regarding Dr. J. Tate Mason, condition worse. Gangrene is set in right leg. May have to amputate. May not live through day. Signed, Dr. Lester Palmer, attending physician.
Mr. Chairman, the presidency of this organization is the highest honor the medical profession can bestow on a physician. Our president-elect is dying. I move we honor Dr. Mason by installing him as president of the American Medical Association, if he is alive tonight.
I second it.
All those in favor?
Aye.
The motion is carried. And last night in the dimly lighted room of Dr. James Tate Mason, lying in the Virginia Mason Hospital, Seattle.
Will we be able to get Kansas City on that little radio, Doctor?
Yes. I'm getting it now, Dr. Mason.
Silence prevails here. The absence of Dr. James Tate Mason here tonight creates a great gap.
Always. That's Dr. McLester talking
as a
now.
And as a man, he has been accorded leadership. The message Dr. Mason has sent us tonight, he knew full well.
Is it loud enough, Doctor? Can you hear all right?
Yes, every word.
Dr. Mason prepared his inaugural address several weeks ago before his
death. This is my day, Palmer. I wish I were there with him.
Dr.
Next year, Doctor.
M. Lynch.
Let's not fool ourselves.
Dr. James Tate Mason's paper on modern trends in surgery.
Time me check up on you again, Mason.
All right, turn it off.
Of the American Medical Association.
Yeah, I guess I know my own inaugural address well enough.
This may be pretty painful, Doctor.
Odd, isn't it, that since I prepared that speech, I've had one leg amputated and probably lose the other one. You know, one of my conclusions in my treatise there reading was that operations on the sympathetic nervous system have saved many persons the loss of bodily extremities, such as legs.
And tonight, with the presidency of the American Medical Association added to the many honors of his brilliant career, Dr. James Tate Mason rallies from his gangrene infection, may yet belie the predictions of famed specialists in Kansas City and live to fulfill actively the highest honorary office of the medical profession. Time marches on.
You are listening to The March of Time, the reenactment of memorable scenes from the news of the world, prepared and presented by the editors of Time.
This is a high-pressure age. We have more things to do and less time to get them done. It's no wonder that we have a new word in the American language, jittery. Now, we don't say that Wrigley's spearmint gum will prevent you from ever getting nervous or jittery. That would be silly. But we do suggest that it will help you to relax. It's refreshing, too. Buy a package and find out for yourself.
Again tomorrow night at this same hour, and every night, Monday through Friday, the March of Time.
Time marches on. is the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Next Wednesday evening at the same time, and each Wednesday thereafter,